listening to the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 62, Social Media Inside of Calvary Chapel. I'm your host, DJ Chuang. I'm recording this episode on the morning of October 3rd, 2013, and this happens to be the day when Pastor Chuck Smith of the Calvary Chapel Movement and Tribe has gone home to be with the Lord, absent from body, present with the Lord, and faithful to the end, even preaching a sermon on Sunday morning, and his talk show question and answer during the week. So our prayers and thoughts go out to him and his extended family for his faithfulness and his contribution and his legacy for all of American Christianity. And I've added a couple links in the show notes at socialmediachurch.net so you can get a snapshot of his impact in American evangelicalism, as Ed Stetzer has so aptly described. And on this extended episode of the Social Media Church, we have one of the progenies, someone who's worked with Pastor Chuck Smith and has been a part of the Calvary Chapel tribe. And he is the director of online strategies at CalvaryChapel.com, as well as an assistant pastor at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. His name is Josh Taransky, and he spoke at the Calvary Chapel Senior Pastor Conference in 2012 and gave some tremendous insights about the whole Calvary Chapel movement and how to pastorally engage on social media. I love his analogy towards the end where he describes how there is a prophetic and a kingly as well as priestly role with social media. And Josh also does tremendously well in exegeting culture and why it is so important for us to be using social media today here in the 21st century. I know your time is precious and some of you want to skip right to the meat of the presentation and go past the statistics, which are only a snapshot in history and time from about a year ago. You'll want to fast forward to about the 20-minute mark. I'll put the exact time in the show notes so that you can get to the meat of the presentation for where Josh really unpacks well the culture of today, exegeting it, and describing how social media can be used pastorally. A word of thanks to Josh Taransky for permission to share this audio with you, as well as the slides of his presentation. Here's Josh Taransky talking about Calvary Chapel, the church, and social media.
And I have been doing CalvaryChapel.com full-time since that time. And like Brian said, when I met him in the beginning of 2010, I don't remember how our conversation took place, but somehow he knew that I was doing stuff on Facebook and Twitter. And he said he was thinking about it, and he invited me to start his Twitter account for him. So I was the one that went in there and put stuff in there for him and kind of got it up and rolling. And then after about 2 or 3 months, after he'd accumulated some followers, he realized, wow, you know, people really actually would, you know, want to hear what I have to say on Twitter. Then he said, I'll take this, you know. So he's been doing it now for over a year, and he's doing a great job. He does better than I do at posting stuff on a regular basis. And one of the things that I would encourage you to do, if you're not on Twitter yet, is go and follow his list. So you go in, you create a profile, sign up, and just go and look at who he's following, and that'll start you off. Or pick somebody else that you can find on Twitter and, you know, follow them away and then spend a little while listening on it. So anyway, I've been doing social media since I think 2008 was when I started my Facebook account and doing some stuff on Twitter. But I'm not a real social media guy. The last thing I want to do in terms of giving this workshop is kind of get pegged as like the tech guy. I've been in Calvary for working in Calvary in one way or another with education in the Bible College and the university for 12 years. And but I'm not an education guy either. I really love working with people. I love Bible College because it allows me to be around young lives that are getting raised up, and there's an ability to kind of be a part of that young formational season in young people's lives. And I like social media because it's a tool to be able to connect with those people that I've ministered to in the past and see where they're at and see what they're doing. So you can come to me with your questions. Before I even started, I was fielding a couple of technical questions, and I had no idea. But I'd be happy to talk with you. I'd love to connect with you guys. And my contact information is readily available. You can call me anytime you want or email me. I'll try to get back to you. But my goal today in sharing as I thought about this is I had this visual image in my mind. And it's this idea of basically social media is on this trajectory. And Calvary is on a trajectory. And the two collide at some point. And there's a decision that you as a pastor will have to make in terms of how to handle the reality of these two worlds that are colliding. And so I'm going to deal more on a philosophical level of is it valuable? How much does social media really matter? How much of a priority should I give to it? How does it fit within the world? That's kind of the level that I'm going to stay on. The how-to stuff, I'm going to leave to a lot of the guys, a lot of my friends who are in here and follow them on Twitter. I'm friends with you guys on Facebook. I'm going to let you guys, trade secrets back and forth. And then on my blog as well, I kind of usually once a week I'll put up an article or something about how to do Twitter better or how to do Facebook better. There's also a great group, and I think he's watching, Brian Mondock, who's works for Bob Coy. He has a group on Facebook that talks all about how to do social media. So if you're going to need to do it, if you do it, or if somebody in your church does it, ask Brian for help. The guy is great. He's just knows so much in this arena. So let's talk about social media just for a few minutes. I'm going to try not to go longer than an hour, maybe shorter. I know it says on your card that this goes for like an hour and a half or something like that, but I don't need an hour and a half, I don't think. And so let's get started. First of all, you're going to have to make a decision. And whether you make that decision in a passive way or an active way, you're going to have to make a decision when it comes to social media. Like I said, there's an intersection that in our culture we face with social media. Now, there's other things that have kind of risen up within culture over the last 40 years. Let's say, Calvary's 47 years old. Let's say you've been in Calvary for 40 years. There are different things that kind of come along, and you're weighing. You're like, okay, this crosses my path. How am I going to integrate this into the ministry that I'm doing? A lot of stuff, praise the Lord, because I'm obviously a young guy. I'm glad that you guys have said about a lot of those cultural trends. You've said, you know what, we're just not going to do that. Maybe it's the church growth movement, or maybe it's another speaker that says, we've got this package program here, and Calvary's done a great job of just saying, hey, we're going to stick the course. We're going to just stay right on track. We're going to keep to the simple stuff, and that's where we're going to do ministry. When it comes to social media, one of the burdens that I have on my heart is to just say this arena is having a very big impact upon culture. Now, you may still at the end of the day decide, you know what, it's not for me. I'm not going to get into it. I'm going to kind of steer my church in a different direction. But what I do want to say is, in the first half of my message this afternoon, is to say the impact that we're seeing from social media is pretty big. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about social media. Now, there is, as I'm sharing this, I know that there's going to be people that are probably listening on MP3 or after the fact. So there's slides. If you're listening to this, there's a set of slides that I'm going to be going through, pointing at the screen. So get a copy of the slides somehow. You can email me if you don't have them. But I think the guys are going to include the PowerPoint in the package with us. So what is social? Social media started, it kind of really boomed back with MySpace. And the guys were teasing me at lunch saying, you know, just go and preach MySpace. So no, that MySpace is dead, and it died for a good reason. We don't need to get into that. But essentially social network, it's you get a personal profile, and then you have the ability for that profile to connect with other profiles, and you have the ability to kind of feature status updates. And it's morphed over since I think Facebook started in 2004. I have that somewhere in here. But when we're talking about social media, we're talking about Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google Path, or Google Plus, and Path. Those are some of the big ones for us in the U.S., but there's over 70. I think if you go on the Wikipedia article, there's just tons and tons of social networks that are out there. The ones that are popular for us are not necessarily popular in Brazil or in China. But for us in the U.S., these are kind of what we're talking about. So these social networks became popular. The next step, after these platforms became popular, the next thing we had was social integration. Social integration is where you took platforms that existed under Web 1.0 and they kind of built in this whole idea of integrating a social idea. So YouTube was originally just a video sharing platform, but it saw how successful Facebook was, and so it integrated this social component more and more heavily, so that now when you log in with your username to YouTube, you see kind of a feed that's similar to Facebook. Instagram is the idea of photos plus social. Maybe, you know, maybe it's Flickr or whatever. That's the idea of having the social component added to photos. Foursquare is location plus social. Findings or Goodreads is books plus social. Yelp is food plus that social component. Pinterest, which has been a big one this last year, is the idea of idea content plus social. So why do we call it social media? I found this great quote in Chris Brogan's book. He says this, and he's quoting somebody else essentially. He says, Marshall McLuhan describes a medium as any extension of the human body. Wheels are a medium because they're an extension of our feet, and money is a medium that extends human power. We view online social networks, the Facebooks and the Twitters of our time, as media, not because they help us communicate, but because they extend human relationships. This is something that neither television nor radio ever could have done because they were all one way. Email never could do it as effectively either because of the communication didn't occur in a public space, and I would add it didn't happen in real time. It's a little bit faster, but it didn't happen in real time. So the reason we call it social media is because it's an extension of who you are. It's an extension of relationship. Let me just give you a couple of stats. Facebook, founded 2004. It's when it went public a couple of weeks ago, the IPO numbers that it gave out was that it had 901 million active users, and there were 2.7 billion likes and comments per day. Twitter was founded in 2006. It has 140 million active users as of this spring and 340 million tweets per day. Last year, Google Plus started. It was founded in 2011 and they have 100 million users so far. Now, these three are just three out of, you know, dozens. But they're each one is distinct. So if you're new to social media, don't look at Facebook and Twitter and put them into the same camp. They operate very, very differently. And because of their distinction, they're used in very different ways. Facebook is kind of like a walled garden. It has, you know, it's been critiqued on privacy, but essentially, in order to be a friend on Facebook, you have to send a request, and that request has to be accepted on the other side. And so the people who view your content typically in general are people that you've approved to see your content unless you make your post public. Now, Twitter, on the other hand, is completely open. You can follow whoever you want, and whoever wants to follow you can follow you unless you block somebody. So what the openness of Twitter does is it makes it this real-time live stream of life that people are having. At any given point, you can do a search and you can see, you know, who's talking about Calvary. So one of my jobs overseeing content for CalvaryChapel.com and working with Brian is I have an ongoing search, just searching who's talking about Calvary Chapel, who's talking about Chuck Smith. And so I see every negative and every good thing that comes across that stream. Same with on Google. I have an active Google search that's just always searching those types of content. So you have these different networks, these social networks with different rules. And depending on how the rules are created, they get used for different things. The interesting thing is Google Plus came along and it started and it took a lot of the appearance of Facebook, but it gave it the rules of Twitter. So it's got this openness to it. And so Google Plus hasn't really taken off yet. You know, it's getting maybe a fraction, maybe 5% of the engagement level that Facebook and Twitter is getting. But we'll see what happens in the future. The amazing thing that we're learning about social networks is that it's only as good as the people who use it, which is a lesson for you as a pastor, because it's really only of value to you as much as the people who you want to connect with are on it. So one of the questions we would want to ask is, well, who do you want to connect with and what's valuable in that comparison there? But Google Plus, great platform, looks beautiful, but so far it offers me very little value personally because, you know, most of my friends are not on it as much. They've got accounts, but they're not engaged on it. Here's one article off of Mashable just related to Facebook. It says, in the race for user attention, Facebook is king. The average U.S. user spent a whopping 7 hours and 46 minutes on Facebook in August. That's last August. And a full 15.5 minutes. That is a full 15.5 minutes the average American spends on Facebook every single day. This last Saturday, Brian Mondock sent me a link. You might have seen this New York Times article that came out. The story, you got to go read the story. It's amazing. But essentially what happened was Twitter headquarters, they're looking at their stats and their analytics. And they see this kind of outlier statistic, something that surprised them. And they realize that there's this group of no-name people to them at Twitter that were seeing engagement levels that was 3 times that of Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga and some of these other, you know, pop superstars. And they were trying to figure out, who are these people? And the names that were popping up were like Andy Stanley, Mark Driscoll, Joyce Meyer. They had no clue. So they went out, they tried to figure out, who are these people that are seeing these crazy engagement levels? And they found out, well, these are evangelical Christians. You know, we've got a big camp in their eyes. And they said, this is crazy. And it's a business to them, obviously. So they hired a girl who had a Christian background to go, and all she does is full-time just interact with evangelical Christians, goes to conferences just as kind of an evangelist for Twitter. Because for some reason, we as believers are seeing 3 times the level of success that some of these other superstars are. It has something to do with who we are as believers, that we love to connect, you know. By the way, little glossary note here. When we talk about engagement levels, what we're talking about is the interaction that's going back and forth. So on Twitter, that would be retweeting something that was sent out or replying to something that was said, reposting it on Facebook. An engagement activity would be to either like it, give it a thumbs up, or to comment on it, or to have somebody post on your wall. So in essence, what I'm trying to say through this section in terms of statistics, that 901 million people are on Facebook, is that it is not a small little trend, but it is dramatically impacting life. And there's a lot of eyeballs on it. So you, as a pastor, me as a Bible college director, I want people's attention, not because I want people to look at me, but I really believe that God's given me a message for people's life. I feel called to lead them to the Lord. And so when I can look and see somebody's paying attention, they're putting eyeballs in a dedicated way on a daily basis in one particular area, I want to start thinking, maybe I should be there, right? How many of you guys have gone out and done evangelism? And when you think about where you want to go do evangelism, it's like, well, where are the people gathered, right? When we were here in 99, 2000, we would go, well, where do we want to go do evangelism? If we went and did it out here, you know, that back then there was just like a field there. We wouldn't go do evangelism out there. We'd drive up to Hollywood. We'd go down to Oceanside because there's people just walking back and forth. And we want to be where the people are at. Same thing with, you know, ministering to people in the church. One of the most rich times that you have ministering to people in a brick and mortar sense is after the service, right? Praying with people, and you're providing a place of connection. So these social media platforms are more and more providing that type of connection. So the question that arises is, how much real life impact does social media have on real life? You know, real life: friendship, family, buildings, money, food. But how are these real life institutions being impacted by social media? What is the impact? Well, when we talk about impact, the word that's used is the word disruption. So if you were doing a startup, one of the things that you would talk about often would be disruption. When we talk about disruption, we're talking about the whole idea of institutions that have gone on for 100 years all of a sudden being kind of turned on their head. Let me give you a list of some of those. When we talk about manufacturing, you know, it's all over the news, is going overseas. Well, why is it able to go overseas? It's not because of social media. It's because of Web 1.0, which is the ability to communicate really quickly back and forth. So we can send manufacturing overseas really quickly. We can outsource stuff really quickly. I have a great story about outsourcing stuff. I'll tell you some other time if you want to hear it. But in essence, you can hire anybody to do anything for a really low amount of money, and that's caused disruption when it comes to manufacturing. Journalism, you know, and newspapers and magazines, we see that those institutions were dramatically impacted by blogs and online news being readily available. Travel services, publishing, stock brokering, marketing and advertising, web design, office administration, music, and movie rentals. I mean, each one of these were an institution that on one day it's like, man, you know, this is the rage. And the next minute it's like, wow, that's an empty Blockbuster, you know, building right there. What happened to Blockbuster? Well, it got disrupted, right? It got disrupted because of the web. Now, that's just Web 1.0, right? So 10 years ago, some guy like me would have gotten up and given a message and said something along the lines of, like, you know, watch out, the internet's coming. It's going to cause disruption. And it is, right? Now we're at the point where we're in Web 2.0 with this whole social integration and this whole aspect of social media. And we're wondering, well, how is it going to impact culture? What impact is it going to have upon real life? Another impact that's taking place with social media is just the rapid ascension to fame. Some of these individuals, basically, you know these individuals, Justin Bieber, who he's famous because of YouTube. So he didn't follow the normal trends, you know, within the normal institutions of how fame is kind of achieved. But he's famous because he basically embraced a platform, put his stuff up there. He was discovered, and he became famous because he used Twitter as he was trying to release his first song. Some of these other individuals, Jeffrey Bethke. How many of you guys know who Jeffrey Bethke is? Yeah, three of you. Well, you don't know him, but did any of you watch the video back about 6 months ago, Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus? How many of you saw that video? Oh, some more of you did. The guy who did that video was named Jeffrey Bethke. You'd never heard of Jeffrey Bethke before that. I hadn't. But within 2 days, he had 3 million people had watched that video. Mark Driscoll, Matt Chandler, Tim Keller, most of these guys, instead of kind of following the normal institutional route of becoming well-known, they instead are well-known because they've created content that's readily shared on these social platforms. So there's an impact. Basically, what I'm trying to say is these social networks are having a dramatic impact upon culture. And things are happening very rapidly and quickly because of how much social media, just its impact upon culture. So instead of talking about, you know, social media and putting it into the camp of, you know, I don't know, slap bracelets. That was what was like popular when I was a kid. You know, those little slap bracelets, you know? They're making a comeback, by the way. I bought one for my son. That was like a trend, right? It comes and it goes. I hate to tell you this, but social media is not going anywhere too quickly. Why is it so popular? Here's some of the components that make social media such a powerful influence upon culture. The ability to share and to listen to others. Sticky and remarkable content. The ability for things to go viral. The ability to gather an audience. The emphasis on dialogue rather than monologue. The move to mobile platforms and the fact that it's happening in real time. You just take mobile and real time, those two components right there, and you give people access on their phones to see stuff happening in real time is wild. In 2010, I was evacuated from a men's conference at 3 a.m. in the morning and ended up in Bill Stonebreaker's sanctuary on Twitter because there was a tsunami headed for Hawaii. And my source of information was just a Twitter search for the word tsunami. And I would search it, and every 1 second, 75 new posts would appear. And all I'm doing is just refreshing that page, just looking at the latest news that's coming in related to the tsunami. That ability to receive information real time is something unlike we've seen in the past. But you also have this ability for people to gather an audience. You know, no-name guys. In the past, in Calvary, oftentimes the guys that, you know, share and that we really kind of look up to and that are kind of our heroes, I know the guys that are my heroes are the guys that, you know, they have big churches and God's blessed them. They've been faithful for years and years and years. But, you know, when we go online and we look and see, you know, who's got the most followers, it's a completely different story. It's interesting to look at who, even within our own little subculture of Calvary, you know, who are the guys that have the most followers? Who are having kind of the most influence when it comes to social media? It's a different, you see kind of a different picture when you're there. And it's very interesting. So, to just recap, social media, it's on this trajectory where it's basically going to collide with most cultural institutions. It is on a collision course to impact a lot of different things. Interesting thing, really, as a side note, the main people that are commenting and giving analysis on social media is the marketing and the business arena. They're guys that are you know, they're trying to help marketers and businesses learn how to use these platforms to make more money. And so it's difficult for me in my job trying to learn about this stuff going, you know, they're really the only people that are writing about this. So you're, you know, reading through kind of a marketing business book on social media. And then you're saying, well, okay, we're the church over here. We don't want to commercialize the church, but yet, you know, what do these guys have to say? What are they observing? How do we interact with it? Here's the crazy thing. There's about 10 guys that right now are writing about social media. And you know what they're saying? If you want to succeed on social media, they're saying you need to be authentic. You need to be transparent. You need to be genuine. You need to be generous. You need to be caring. You need to be make an emotional investment. You need to be creative. I read all that and I said, wow. In essence, what they're saying is you just need to be a Christian in order to succeed on Facebook and Twitter. It's crazy. But that's how much the world is impacted, that businessmen and marketers are saying, you've got to be genuine and caring, which is not typically what you hear kind of from that community, in order to succeed. So it's having an impact. Let's talk a little bit about Calvary and our trajectory. What is Calvary Chapel's trajectory? Now, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm not going to get myself in any trouble. But I can tell you, having been a part of Calvary for 14 years, I can tell you what I love about Calvary and where we're at, some components of where we're at. And then I'll share how I think these two interact. I wrote down just some of the, about six or seven things that I really value about Calvary Chapel and kind of our DNA. First is that we have this component where we're humble, subtle, and quiet. That's just a part of, if you're going to kind of describe our personality, there's a subtleness. And it comes from Chuck, right? Chuck had an experience where the church group that he was a part of was really pushing you to be kind of out there and using fleshy, carnal tactics to get people in the church. And Chuck said, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to be humble, subtle, and quiet. And it stuck. Another one that I wrote down is that we're preaching with a high esteem for God's word, believing it will accomplish the work. Another one is the desire to interpret and use the Bible in a literal way. That's what we've been. That's what we're doing. We're holding to a fundamental belief that the Holy Spirit is eager to empower the church to be the church through natural and supernatural gifts. We're not cessationists, right? We believe in the work of the Holy Spirit. We're ready to serve. You guys are ready to serve. I'm ready to serve because God uses the foolish things of the world to accomplish his work. We believe the bar is low in terms of people being able to do ministry and to get involved. I appreciate that deeply, that Calvary Chapel lets young guys like me without a formal degree be a part of what God's doing. And I'm sure you guys do as well. And we're believing that the autonomous leadership of the senior pastor is advantageous as he leads the church to take ventures of faith. This is just one part of who we are, that we give great authority, leadership authority to our senior pastors because we want to free them up to lead us into ventures of faith. And then living with a genuine excitement over world events as they appear to coincide with a literal interpretation of eschatology. That's kind of, at least, I'm not speaking for anybody but myself. But as I look at Calvary and what I've seen, those are some of the qualities that I value. Here's where we're at today. We're about 47 years old. Very diverse because Pastor Chuck gives so much freedom to guys to do ministry in so many different ways. We tend to be a movement that's older rather than younger. You know, maybe me, I think Levi is speaking tomorrow. We're like your token young guys. Although I'm really blessed that there's a lot of young guys here this year. I think there's probably twice as many young guys here this year than there were last year, at least from just a scan of the crowd. We're isolated rather than integrated with evangelicals. We're behind the curve on technology, as is most of the church. Pressing forward in church planting, missions, and education. And highly respected for monologue, or our ministry of preaching the word. We have a really good reputation. You know, most of the students that go to Bible college, at least the ones that I've been the director of or been a part of admissions process, 70% of them are not from Calvary, but they came because their pastor said, you know what, Calvary has a really good reputation for teaching the word. And so that's where we're at. You know, God's doing some really great things in our midst. But one of the things that you'll notice is this one right at the top. We're 47 years old, which means we have some established routines. And what I want to ask you to do as this new medium develops is I want to ask you to pray about it. Every movement, every church on a microcosm level has to jump through hoops as it faces new challenges. As you grow, you make leadership decisions. How are we going to handle this? How are we going to handle that? As a movement that's now almost 50 years old, please be praying, asking the Lord, how do we relate to the present cultural realities that exist. Here's where Calvary is at when it comes to social media. There's over 180 Calvary Chapel ministry leaders on Twitter. If you'd like to find them, you can go. I have a list, and there's a couple guys that have lists out there. And if you, I don't know, just message me, I'll send you the link to it. But, or I think I tweeted it a couple days ago. But there's 180 guys on there. There's about 1,500 Calvary Chapel pastors. So we'd love to have you on Twitter. I think you'd be blessed if you got on there. There's more and more Calvary Chapel starting Facebook pages. And there's healthy interaction on both Facebook and Twitter. Put a couple of guys down there. Brian and Kellen are doing a great job on Twitter. Mike Stengel, he did not have any idea that I'd put his name down there, but he does a great job on his Facebook pages. One thing I love about Mike is that before he preaches his sermon, he always finds a picture that, not always, but typically he finds a picture that represents his sermon. And he puts it up there and he kind of gives a teaser for his message and he gets a conversation started on his, just on his Facebook wall, going into the message. He does a great job. And Greg's like the champion in Calvary in terms of Facebook. The guy's got like 80,000 some odd fans, which is a big number for at least Christian leaders. So go tell him to hook you up with some followers. Real quickly, just in passing, one real practical note. If you have a Facebook, want to have a Facebook presence for your church, please do not create a personal profile for your church. First of all, it breaks policy with Facebook, so you're in jeopardy at any point of getting your profile deleted. So let's say you go in and you build up like 4,000 fans with your personal profile. But because you put the first name in there as Calvary and the last name Chapel, if they realize that's not a real person and it's an institution, they could just kill you, kill your page, and then you got to start all over from scratch. So Facebook allows you to create a public page. So you go to anybody's page, go to like Brian's page, or go to the Word for Today's page, or go to Greg's page, and in the upper right-hand corner, it says, start a page. You just click on that and you start a page, right? So just a little word to the wise. When I do, as I kind of oversee this stuff and I'm trying to share stuff on the Calvary Chapel page, if I search for Calvary Chapel, I come up with like 50 personal profiles. And I need your guys' help to change that and create public pages so that functions right. If you're more interested in that, I wrote a blog post about that a couple of weeks ago. Just search for Facebook pages or something like that and you'll find it. Now, that's where Calvary's at. Now, there is still some opposition to social media. Here's two pages worth of reasons why people oppose it. Okay, and I'm going to deal with these in a second. First of all, it's too discouraging to see what people are doing in my church. That's one of the main reasons I hear people don't have a Facebook account or they killed it. The second one is I don't have the time for the light and fluffy stuff. I have more important things to do. And then the classic example is who cares what so-and-so had for lunch, right? That's kind of the stigma that Twitter has. It's just a distraction from real life. There's no ROI or return on investment. Here I'm doing it, I put time into it, but there's no real, you know, it just doesn't seem to pay off for the kingdom of heaven. It's still too young. It's, you know, it's, we'll give it some more time, let it mature a little bit longer. And then the legal issues are too thorny. I threw that one in for Roger and that last lady that was in here. Social media is just another trend that will pass. We need to control our message. I don't have time to keep track of what every Joe or Jane says, and I can't afford and don't want to pay someone else to do it. We're doing fine without it. So those are some of the reasons that social media has been rejected. But let me tell you some of the consequences. some of the consequences. If you decide, hey, you know what, I'm not going to do it, here's some of the things that will happen. First of all, you'll create a vacuum that will probably be filled by the wrong person. So if you decide, I'm not going to show up and not going to say anything, and you're absent, that gives place for somebody else to speak on your behalf, which is really not good. We've seen that as a whole for Calvary. In our absence, other people can speak on our behalf. Believe me, one of my jobs is I'm subscribed to every time Calvary Chapel is ever mentioned on the internet as a whole. It's a great job. And sometimes it's a bummer that there's a vacuum. You know, there's nobody, you know, responding to some of the stuff out there. And there's stuff that you don't have to always respond to. But look, if you're absent, then you create a vacuum that can be filled by somebody else. Another consequence for rejecting social media is unofficial Facebook pages will be created by your church members. So anybody can create a page, just like I described to you a second ago. So 2 months ago, I went and I looked up how many Facebook pages are affiliated with Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. Because we haven't yet really led our own church through this process. We're still thinking about which direction we want to go. And I did this because Fort Lauderdale did this and was telling me some stuff that they had to kind of go through. But basically anybody can create it. So I found 32 pages, not just personal profiles, but 32 Facebook pages that related to some ministry or another at Costa Mesa. Missions trip. This mission trip that went about 2 years ago. It's still a public page. This event over here that's happened, you know, this year, and that event ended and they created a new Facebook page. It was just basically because nobody was leading, you have 32 pages all over the map. You don't want that, believe me. I think one of the stories from Fort Lauderdale was somebody went into the Google locations and changed the phone number for the church. So instead of people calling the church office, they were calling a little preschool on the church property. Was getting all of Calvary Chapel Fort Lauderdale's phone calls for a little while because it's wide open in terms of changes. So you really do want to take a kind of a leadership role in this whole thing. If you don't show up, you'll neglect the opportunity to speak to an audience of listeners. I would say that you've got to get into this mentality of realizing there's your primary audience that you speak to on Sunday, but then there's a secondary audience that exists online. And those people, when you speak to them, you may be catching them at a point where they're even more receptive, more willing to listen to what you have to say. And so don't neglect that secondary audience that's online. And your influence, leadership, and voice will be limited. Let me see what else. And there will be a governor on your reputation. Let me talk, because that's a weird thing to say in terms of, you know, we talk about influence. One of the real crazes in this whole arena of social media is a social score. So not only do you have social media, but now you can get rated on how influential you are on your platforms. And what's happening is people are being given a social score, and then businesses are coming along and they're saying, we will give a perk or a prize or a reward of our product for free to anybody with a score of this level or higher. And so it's whether you like it or not, and there's a lot of critics of the whole idea of getting a social score, of being evaluated and getting a grade on how influential you are online. It's there. It's beginning to be a thing where employers, as they're hiring employees, they're asking, well, what's your social score? Let me see. How influential are you? If I get a guy who, you know, he has 3,000 fans on his Facebook page to be, you know, my worship leader versus a guy that has, you know, 300, I might be interested in the guy that has 3,000 because by connecting with him, all of a sudden, I'm connected now with 3,000 people that might share my content. There's some thinking there that goes, I mean, you got to, I don't know whether that's carnal or spiritual, and it's weird, but it's the reality that we're looking at is that people are being evaluated based off of their score. You look at Greg Laurie's fact that he has 88,000 followers, I, on the back end, know what a person like that, when they send out a link to an article or something, the traffic that goes to that article because of one time sharing with that big of an audience is really, really powerful. So you've got the whole ethics involved in this whole arena. You know, I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's offered Greg money. Hey, would you, you know, tweet out this for me or send a Facebook link to this and I'll pay you X amount of dollars. And people, not Greg, but then not any Christian that I know, but there are people out there that will do that. You'll say, hey, look at my big audience. I'll sell my audience to you. I'll use my platform to send out this stuff. So there is, I think it's going to be more and more costly to not show up. One example that I heard a guy say was, you know, right now social media is like a kidney. You can do without one. Maybe. But as we go along further and further, it could become the heart of culture where a lot of the interaction is taking place. Real life is still happening. You know, those intimate moments, one another face to face is still going on. But the extension of that relationship in social media could become so integral within culture that it is very costly to not show up and be present. So this brings us to a decision. And what I wanted to do at this point was show you a video, which I cannot, but I will recommend. I can't because my computer will not play it, but it's a video done by Albert Mohler this last week, and he's interviewed for 10 minutes on why he uses social media, and I told Brian, I was like, let's just show that. That's pretty much sufficient for the workshop. It's great. So go and look at it. Let's look at those scriptures. What does the Bible say to us related? How does it guide us in terms of social media? There's two things I'm going to say. First of all, it's a Christian liberty. So that means that there's no boundary that forbids us from going into social media, and there's no command that to go and do it. It's a Christian liberty, right? It's a matter of conscience. So the Holy Spirit needs to show you if it fits into your life or not. The last thing I want to do is tell you, you have to do it. I'll make a good case of here's how it can benefit you, here's how it might work, but you can give me probably a number of really good reasons of, hey, you know, here's why it's not the best thing for me. If the Holy Spirit says to go and do it, he says go and do it for the sake of the gospel, right? That's it. In my understanding of matters of conscience and how Paul talked about matters of conscience and how he used his freedom, he said, I'm going to go and do it for the sake of the gospel. And we also see that Paul, as he explained matters of conscience, he limited himself for three reasons, right? It's either if it stumbles a believer, not just offends them or kind of mess, but if it literally causes a believer to sin, he would limit himself. If it caused an unbeliever to sin, he would limit himself. Or if it was a indulgence of the flesh that would lead to sin and jeopardize personal purity, then he would limit himself. So as you're praying about it, and recognizing you have liberty in Christ to do it, you're saying, is it a yes or a no from the Lord based on those criteria? Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 15, he says, for you're called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you're not consumed by one another. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul lays out his freedom. Look what he says, and just consider this in terms of the idea of being on social media. He says, for though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessing. Again, it's if you go in, and you're not there already, or if you're there already. Again, the check mark for us is, how am I furthering the gospel in people's life by being on Twitter or being on Facebook? There's a deliberate preaching of the gospel that we do, evangelism, discipleship. But then there's also a component that I would suggest, as you're telling people what you had for lunch, you're loving your people that are following you because you're letting them into your real life. People are hungry for connection. You know that as a pastor. You know people really kind of can put you up on a pedestal and really kind of are like, wow, you're a pastor, you know? But I grew up in a pastor's home, and I know a lot of real life happens in a pastor's home. And one of the most refreshing things that people in my dad's church found out was my dad was normal and ate lunch just like everybody else. And so as you share your lunch, or like Brian shares his runs with, you know, every morning he goes running and he posts like his runs to Twitter. He's not doing that so he can boast in how far he ran, but he's letting people be a part of real life. And I think that's what Jesus did with his disciples. And I think that that's a part of us being leaders within the culture where we live. Second, it's an incarnational ministry. I want to encourage you to consider doing social media as an incarnational ministry. Leaving your privacy, what you may be comfortable with and what is familiar, and entering into connections with others for the sake of giving ourselves to God's work in their lives. I'm not going to read it all, but Philippians 2, 1 through 11 is that classic passage on Jesus being incarnate, right? Coming into the world. He says in verse 5, having this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant and being born in the likeness of men. Jesus came into the world to save men. He lowered himself. He entered into our real life. Earlier, I gave you some objections to social media. I'm going to go through those again and just point out that Jesus could have made some of the same excuses when it came to being incarnate. Jesus could have said to you and I, it's too discouraging to see what people in the world are doing. I don't have time for the light and fluffy. Up here in heaven, I have more important things to do. It's just a distraction from real life. There's not enough return on my investment. Couldn't Jesus have said that? There's not enough return on my investment. It's still too young. The world is still too young. Social media is just another trend that will pass. Jesus could have said, I won't be able to control the message. I don't have time to keep track of what every Joe or Jane says, and I can't afford and don't want to pay someone else to do it. We're doing fine without it. We tried it, it doesn't work, and the legal issues are too thorny. Jesus could have said all that as an excuse not to be incarnate. There's good reasons. I understand that there's good reasons. I understand what we were talking earlier with somebody about, I think a recent Time article cited that 50% of divorces, the paperwork cites Facebook as a cause for divorce. There's a cultural problem that exists. But to decide that it's because there's sin that exists is a reason to not show up on the platform is to, I think, take a short-term view. Because the reality is that that's where the eyeballs of your people are at. That's where life is happening. And would it strongly encourage you to take on the mind of Christ and view it as an opportunity to be incarnate within the culture today and be a part of your people's lives. We have a tendency to glorify our brick and mortar as real life and treat everything that happens online as if it were a second-class citizen. But Jesus could have done the same thing. His real life was far above our brick and mortar, but he humbled himself and entered into our world to accomplish the mission his Father gave to him. We don't get to choose whether or not we like social media to have the impact that it's having upon culture. Many of you may. There's a lot of guys who would say, I wish it wasn't so influential. But we don't get to choose that. You may be wishing that, we could go back to the olden days. But I love you, but who cares what you wish? Who cares what I want, right? The reality is that this is where the culture's at. This is what's happening within our culture. And there are a number of really good reasons to kind of engage with people through these platforms. So let's talk about Calvary Chapel and how do we as a movement, how do we adopt Facebook, Twitter, some of these social platforms? I want to break it into three categories. As a pastor, as a ministry leader, you have a prophetic role, a priestly role, and a kingly role, okay, as a prophet. The idea of being a prophet is that you're God's messenger. You're contextualizing the message, right? And so as a part of that, one of the reasons, if you're to ask, well, why should I be there? I'd say to be marked as present and not absent. That's the first, in this interview that I wanted to show you with Moeller, the guy asked him, well, why do you do it? And he says, well, simply because I want to be marked as present. I want to be there. You know, I don't want to be absent in this arena. It's worth our investment because it's where the eyeballs are at. And listening on these platforms may be as valuable as sharing. You may be thinking that I'm advocating that you have to go in and actually post a lot of stuff. I wouldn't. If I were you and you're new to this stuff, don't go on Twitter and just start posting a bunch of stuff. Just go in and follow 150 people and just listen to what they're saying. What are they talking about? See how it's useful. Delete some of the people that are not useful, that are irritating. Put some new people on there. You know, just go and see how it works. Listen for a while. It's its own culture. It has its own rules. Don't go and make a fool out of yourself right off the bat. Just look how other people are engaged on it and using it, and I think you'll see some really good stuff right off, pretty early on. And then also to extend the ministry God has given you beyond the location of the church and the time frame of Sunday morning and Wednesday nights. I know you're interacting with people all throughout the week, but these social media platforms allow you right now to encourage your people. Right now. Right now, somebody in your church, I guarantee you, somebody in your church is on Facebook this minute. If you wanted to encourage them, you could just post a scripture right now. You could share what God's showing you at the conference, ask people to pray for you immediately. You don't have to wait till Wednesday night, Sunday morning. You don't have to pick up your phone. You just can post a status update. So a part of that prophetic role here, I also mentioned if you're not engaged in social media, the work God is doing in your church is in a silo. There's one church that I really love in Calvary. I feel like, man, I just love the pastor. I love the messages. Every time I listen to him, I'm so edified. But there's just very little social presence there. And so it's almost as if the great content that pastor is preaching, that ministry, that content's in this silo, it doesn't get out. I want it. You know, I'm like, come on, if you would set up a Facebook page, I would be a fan. You know, I am giving you permission to give me your stuff because I like it. But because it doesn't exist, it's old fashioned and I'm too lazy to go and connect with it in the old fashioned way. Which, by the way, the old fashioned way is to go subscribe to a podcast. Isn't that crazy? Podcasting was like new 5 years ago, and now it's like I'm too lazy to go and do that. Two more things in terms of this prophetic role: to help people feel connected with you as you share what you're doing, and to help others connect with one another. It's a great tool. Here, I was telling somebody, like I think I was telling Pat about, or I was telling somebody about Pat, or I was telling Kellen that he's got to connect with Pat, and they don't really know each other except for the fact that they know each other on Twitter. It's a great way to help people in your church connect with one another and let them feel connected with what you're doing. That's that side of the prophetic. I don't have a whole... Consider yourself in terms of this prophetic role that God's given you, being a messenger in the culture, contextualizing the message. You consider it. What does that look like for you? There's this king... Or let's not go to kingly role here. Let's do the priestly role. The priestly role is this idea of being God's mediator and caring for spiritual lives. And, you know, this is taking place as you're doing evangelism online. Now, you model evangelism for the people in your church. It's amazing what gospel connections you can have with the lost, especially because some of you guys got saved later on in life. So when people friend you, and connect with you, there you've got people, you know, maybe 50% of your audience is not going to be a believer. This is what I love. My wife is like amazing with this stuff. It's amazing the people, because I was saved like when I was 2 months old or whatever. I don't know. Growing up in a Christian home, I didn't know a lot of unbelievers. But my wife has like these amazing connections with people. Discipleship. Those who listen to you, there's a lot of people that are listening to you. Basically, discipleship within our cultures has been turned on our head because of these mediums. So there are tons of people that are discipling the people in your church through Facebook. Pop figures, Justin Bieber's discipling your people. Lady Gaga might be discipling your people. There's all kinds of people who have the same access that you could have if you're on these platforms to give you a message. And everybody's preaching something. And the interesting thing is that discipleship's been turned on its head, so you have, you know, multiple sources pouring into one life more than ever. Now, I know in 30, 40 years ago, you know, you could have a senior pastor and you could recommend different books, and so you have multiple sources kind of giving input. But the ability for, you know, a diverse number of sources to have input on an individual's life has just skyrocketed. And that can be threatening. People, you know, I've talked to guys who feel like they want to be the only contributor on people's life. They're like, well, don't listen to this Christian guy over here. I know he says he's a Christian, but the stuff he says, you know, I don't want you to really listen to him. This isn't going to work. If you want to kind of say, well, this is my banned list. If I want to be your friend on Facebook, but I don't want you to be friends of this guy over here, you're in like a losing battle. And so the only way that you can kind of adapt to that is recognize that you're a contributor to people's spiritual growth as much as you want to be. You know, if you're caring and you're loving people and you're connecting with people, then you're going to be a primary disciple maker of the people in your church. But don't fight to be the exclusive voice, and don't compromise your personality. You're going to have stuff sent to you. You know, you might get, I don't know. And you're going to be like, well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know if I want that to really be kind of the input on the person's life. Well, you be you. Be who the Holy Spirit's empowered you to be. You don't have to be some of these other Christian superstars that are out there. God's made you unique. The last thing you want to do is try to be like anybody else. Let God use you in people's lives. But please be present. Another reason to use these things is to help people feel connected with you. Or I shared that already. Kingly role. This kingly role. We're almost done here. God's leaders, this leadership component. So social media allows you to kind of take a leadership role. First of all, you're able to enhance your relationships with other Calvary guys. It can be lonely to be a pastor. It can be lonely to be kind of out on your own. Some of you guys that are church planting, you know, it's kind of like, well, what are other guys doing? Well, get on Twitter. There's some awesome fellowship that's happening on Twitter with 140 characters back and forth over guys saying, hey, you know, Saturday night, hey, I'm praying for all you guys, and just listing them out by names, you know, or hey, guys, what are you doing for Sunday school curriculum? You know, just throwing it out there, and you get replies back from guys on Sunday school curriculum, or hey, would you pray for me? I'm going into a difficult counseling session, you know, all those things. There's a community of guys already out there. These 180 so guys on Twitter that would love to connect with you, would love to pray for you, would love to have you kind of a part of the picture. Social makes those connections stronger, easier, constant, and public. It's meaningful to the people in your church when they see you interacting with other Christian leaders. It's a good model. It means a lot, especially other guys in your community that are, you know, preaching the gospel, that are right on. If you're connecting with them on these platforms and the people in your church see, hey, wow, my pastor's a friend with that guy down the street. They're working together. Man, that means a lot. You're being a good leader if you're doing that. Recognize the lack of integrity will probably find its way onto the internet. You must be above reproach, because when you're not, it hurts all of us, and our audience is watching how we respond to moral failure. So everything's going to be happening in the public arena. And so as a leader, you may be attacked. Other people may be attacked. And as a leader, I would say, you know, you fit into that in kind of watching what's going on, listening, deciding how you're going to respond. It's just a piece of the puzzle. Lastly, these last two things, to listen to your church and church leaders. It's a great, these tools are just as much as a good listening tool as they are a broadcasting tool or a relational tool. Do some really good listening and then lead others. Use it as a tool to lead others. I mean, the suite of options you have within Facebook to do groups or pages or your personal profile are amazing. So a little tiny bit of how-to and then we'll wrap up. Just getting started. If you're new and you're like, okay, I'm willing to try this out, Josh, here's your first five things to do. Start a Facebook and Twitter account and add their respective apps to your phone if you have a smartphone. Complete your profile info on both platforms. That means you put up your picture, you tell people who you are. The reason I say this is because I've got this constant search of Calvary Chapel people. I want to add your name to the Twitter list so that it's not 180 guys, it's 190 guys, you know, or however many. So I can't find you unless you kind of describe who you are in the little bio section, or unless you say something about Calvary Chapel, because your name's not going to pop up. So message me at least through there, but complete your profile. Add all the friends you know to both accounts. So basically you can import your address book and it finds people based off of email addresses. It'll recommend people to you. So add some friends. On Twitter, I would say go and, you know, you can see who other people are following. You can see, you know, my lists. You can see, you know, Brian. You could see, you know, Callan. There's, you know, a lot of people that you can kind of check out. Well, who should I follow? Follow guys that you know and watch how they're doing it. Watch and listen to what people are saying for at least a week. It's really important. I've seen some mistakes made if you just kind of jump in without really kind of getting a sense of how things work. And then start posting on a daily basis and be ready to make mistakes. We're talking about the wild, wild west. There's not a lot of rules. There are some cultural things that you'll pick up on, but this, I mean, it's changing all the time. We talked about disruption a second ago. The whole social media, they just had a conference a couple days ago, and they're talking about disruption of their own platforms. So this year it's Facebook. I mean, I can't wait to listen to this message in 10 years. I'm going to sound like an idiot because none of this stuff's going to be around. It's going to be something else, right? We just want to use it for what it is right now and recognize that it's a piece of culture. Continuing on, comment on other people's posts. So one big piece of the puzzle is that you're not just kind of getting people to listen to you, but you want to be loving other people. So comment on what other people are saying. Share other posts with your friends. So things go viral because stuff's shared, right? So that Beth Key video or the video about the kid who broke his arm and woke up from anesthesia that we saw last week, which was an internet meme for the week. It was hilarious. Well, I saw it because everybody else shared it, you know? Did you guys see that? It was just funny. But I saw it. And you've seen, you know, every week there's something like that that's going around. It's there because people are sharing it. So instead of sharing dumb videos like that, share the CalvaryChapel.com articles, you know, that are being put up. There's good stuff that's being written, you know. I'll give a plug really quickly for Ken Sutton is doing a great job. He's writing on men's ministry, and he's looking for guys to read his stuff on men's ministry and comment on it. The guy is, like, investing so much time on writing each article. Read his stuff, share it with the guys in your church, comment on it, and then share it on Facebook and Twitter. But all the guys are doing a great job. Share their stuff. And then post a question that relates to a sermon, like I was saying about Mike Stengel. You know, he starts a discussion. And then share a small piece of content. Last little gem I'll leave you with is you don't have to come up with anything new to post online. You don't have to think of something crazy. You're already a content creator as a pastor. You're studying. You're reading pretty much every day. You're answering questions. People are calling you. They're asking questions about the church. They're asking you counseling questions. You're creating content on a regular basis. How many emails do you send a day? Maybe 10. You probably said something interesting in one of those 10 emails that would be valuable for more than just the one person you sent it to. So don't say something really private and put it up online, but take something out of the content that you're interacting with on a daily basis and share it. Hey, I read this great quote, you know, I want to share it with you. Real simple. And people are like, wow, that's awesome. That's what my pastor's reading. That's great. You know, I want to, and somebody else is like, wow, you know, some other pastor is going to come along and go, wow, is that a good book? I was thinking about buying that one. And, you know, it's just pretty basic. So pull from an email, sermon prep, counseling sessions, questions, answers, or testimonies that you interact with on a regular basis. So that is social media in a nutshell.
That was an excerpt of a presentation by Josh Taransky of CalvaryChapel.com. And check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net to connect with Josh, to get a link to the video of the entire presentation, as well as the slides, and a collection of useful articles to help you understand why pastors should use social media and how to get started. Once you've grounded yourself in the why, I think that will propel you into an active ministry extension on social media. Stay connected with us on socialmediachurch.net, and we are, of course, on Twitter and Facebook and Google+. And subscribe to future episodes, as well as browse back to the previous episodes of Social Media Church Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. I'd love your feedback. Call in on our voicemail hotline. The number is 949-354-3216. The number again is 949-354-3216. That wraps up this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. My name is DJ Chuang. Thank you for listening, and until next time, we'll stay connected online.